Yesterday, a Statistics Canada report revealed a result that surprised nobody. Absolutely nobody. Apparently, renters in the Toronto area are the least happy in Canada. Now, StatsCan tends to use numbers to answer these sorts of questions. But if you want a sense of what least happy feels like, just ask a beat reporter.
It's incredibly complicated and very confusing to people. And I think all of those things blended together have made an environment that's very challenging for the ordinary person to find and keep a safe and affordable home.
That was Emily Matthew, who we spoke to exactly 1 year ago. At the time, we talked to her about a crisis in Toronto's rental market. And 1 year later, there have been a lot of reports on that crisis. There have been a lot of numbers, a lot of hearings, a lot of consultations and discussions about what's needed to get a handle on this problem. And there have also been evictions at an increasing rate. Evictions that are frequently used to raise the rent, to make units in an unaffordable city even more unaffordable. You want to get a sense of the difference in this crisis between last year and now? When we talked to Emily last December, she was the affordable housing reporter. And now, she is the affordable and precarious housing reporter. Because it ain't getting better. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Emily Matthew, as I said, is the affordable and precarious housing reporter at the Toronto Star. Emily, that's quite a title.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not something I'd probably try to squeeze on a business card, but I think it does accurately describe the work that I do for the Star.
Explain why that beat is so necessary right now and why we're talking about it.
So why the beat is necessary, I think, has become pretty clear across the city of Toronto because housing is such an important and complicated conversation. And I think one of our roles as journalists is to unpack some of the policies and processes that govern the everyday lives of people who might be struggling to understand how they can find and keep a home. And you really need to have a specialized focus because the more you dig into it, the more you realize that it's exceptionally complex, often inaccessible for people that don't have, say, English as a first language or even a background in law of some kind. And that's where my job comes in. I try to unpack a little bit of those processes and problems for people.
Well, you were telling me about policies that exist that were created for a different city that were meant to be helpful and enable people to move between homes. And now, in the middle of a housing crisis, they don't work so well. And one of those is no-fault evictions. Can you tell me what they are?
I can. I mean, I think we can start maybe a bit at the top of the mountain. So all disputes between tenants and landlords in Ontario are basically dealt with by something called the Residential Tenancies Act, which is a provincial law. And yes, it was built with good intentions. It was a set of rules that would ensure that landlords could remove tenants that weren't paying their rent, if need be, and tenants would have protections on the flip side if landlords were entering their house or forcing them out for illegal reasons. So it was meant to be a good thing. So it's a complex set of policies and processes and procedures. And built within that, there's different types of evictions. So if we separate it into two simple categories, we look at something you could call, say, fault evictions. And that's largely when a tenant is not paying rent, and then, of course, you're going to be asked to leave your home.
Right.
No-fault evictions are something where tenants are acting in good faith, they're paying on time, but there are processes that allow a landlord to remove them from the home for other reasons. Two examples of that would be something called, well, it's a process that starts with a notice called an N-12. And what an N-12 represents is when a landlord is trying to reclaim a property for personal use. So I'm living in an apartment, I've been living there for 2 years, I'm paying my rent, I take out the trash, I don't make any noise, I get a notice at the door from my landlord saying that I need this place back for me, I need it back for my spouse, certain members of my extended family, and if it is done in good faith, there's not much a tenant can do. You have to go.
Is it always done in good faith? That's a tough question.
I mean, my immediate answer, of course, is no. I mean, because we've seen cases, you know, where people have clearly used the law in ways that it was not intended. Am I going to point the finger at people and say that they're deliberately doing it in bad faith? I can't because I'm not inside that person's head.
Right.
But I mean, the things that we've reported on clearly show that the law is used in a rather loose fashion, oftentimes to try to get people out. And if that remedy fails, they'll try something else. So that to me is a pretty clear indication it's being abused.
In the middle of the housing crisis, how often do these kind of evictions happen?
N12s, N13s, the whole kit and caboodle. Well, I mean, I would say that it's fairly infrequent if you were to say, look at the general volume of hearings that are heard across the province of Ontario. So if you look at, say, the number of applications that are that have gone before the board according to the 2018-2019, you know, annual report from Social Justice Tribunals Ontario, you're looking at about 89,000 applications that were dealt with by the board. A very small percentage of those are these ones where people are, you know, asking people to leave to recover the property for their own use. Or the second category, which is getting a lot of attention, is something called, the slang term is a rent eviction. And that starts with something called an N13 notice. And that's the bigger problem. And that's the one where landlords essentially say that I need you out because a unit needs extensive renovations. You have to, you know, move out. They're supposed to give you money equivalent to the rent or find you another place to live. But what advocates and activists have said, and what we have now officially reported on, is that landlords have in fact used that process to permanently eject tenants, find new ones they can move back in to pay three times the rent. And while there are monetary penalties that they face as a result of those actions, they almost stand to make a profit if they do it right. Mm. So is it common? I couldn't really quantify it and give you a certain percentage, but are we seeing it more and more? Yes. And that's what ACTO reported. So, you know, a lot of the reason I came here today was to talk about what the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario has reported through numbers they've collected through their Tenant Duty Counsel program.
Yeah.
And those are the lawyers that you would go to if you were a confused tenant. You know, you go into the board, you know, you've never been before a hearing before. You walk into these offices and you can get free legal help. And they're supposed to help you navigate the process. And what they've done, and what's great on our end, is they basically condensed information from 42,400 meetings and gave us a bit of a snapshot of what tenants are, you know, telling them or causing them problems across the city.
When you look at that snapshot, what did you see as somebody who's been covering this?
I see a few things. I mean, you could look at it in two different ways. You could look at an increased frequency of use because they're reporting on, you know, numbers that they hadn't seen before and a spike in certain types of attempted evictions. The optimistic side of me also looks at it and thinks that this represents an increased awareness that if you are handed one of these notices, it's not an absolute, that there are places you can go to get advice, understand the process, and then weigh whether or not it's something you want to fight. And what ACTO mentions in the report and what they've mentioned throughout is this is a snapshot. This does not represent the number of people being handed these notices. These only represent the people who have come in for help. And it's very common when you speak to tenant advocates on the ground to say that more often than not, people will just throw their hands up in frustration because they can't bear the option of a hearing. And in all honesty, they think the landlord is acting in good faith and the law is in the landlord's side. So what's the point?
Right.
So they're seeing the fight. They're seeing this slice of battle. They're not actually seeing what's happening on the ground in its full depth and breadth. And I mean, as a reporter, these snapshots are exceptionally valuable. And I think it's important to point out that, you know, this particular one is actually in danger. The provincial government made a decision to cut a huge chunk of money out of the broad budget of Legal Aid Ontario. And those cuts are trickling down to organizations like ACTO. And in particular, they stand to lose quite a bit of money from the tenant advocacy program that collected this data. They're appealing it, but right now that's up in the air. And I mean, in a climate like this, I can't think of anything that we need more than good research about what's actually happening on the ground.
How do you go about getting a sense of what is happening on the ground?
Well, there's a couple ways. I mean, a lot of it comes from, you know, individual conversations with, you know, legal representatives, tenants groups, advocacy groups. One of the things that I always find so useful as a reporter is just listening to people tell their stories. And one of the most interesting and organized places that that can happen is City Hall. And the newest tool that's available to me and is available to our city as a whole is there's a new subcommittee at City Hall that specifically deals with the protection of affordable rental housing. Two of the key focuses are dealing with these, you know, rogue, my word, not the council's, N12 and N13 applications and giving tenants perhaps some protections at the municipal level if these notices come to their door. And this is one of the most interesting tensions, I think, happening in rental housing right now, because landlord and tenants, all of the disputes are basically governed by a provincial law. So if you are a city councillor and your, you know, constituents are coming to you and saying, this thing is happening to me, I don't know what to do, up until this point, the city has been largely powerless to intervene. Mm. And so this committee has been created to find ways that the city can use their own tools to slow, investigate, or even just make sure they thoroughly track what is happening when it comes to these types of evictions. So it's a really interesting time, I think.
What's the tension like then between the city and the province on this? We talk about this a lot, it seems, on this podcast, because almost every issue right now creates tension between the city of Toronto and the province of Ontario.
Well, I mean, we have a new provincial government, and while I won't say they're entirely inaccessible, we're not getting a lot of information about what it is that they're actually doing. And very early on, one of the questions that, you know, we were putting to them as journalists, and I say collective we journalists across Toronto, is, you know, what are you going to be doing about the Residential Tenancies Act? We know that they've been undergoing like quite a thorough review. You know, I've repeatedly asked, you know, who's been involved in all of these conversations, and they've just sort of, you know, shucked that question off. So I'll probably have to FOI it. But they've been saying, you know, they have said out of the gate that they were reviewing the act with potential legislative changes to happen this fall. Now that goalpost has been shifted. Now we're talking about potential legislative changes in winter 2020. We don't know.
That's
what
a
it
long
is.
Way to shift something.
It is. It's a long way. I mean, so we'll know hopefully maybe January, February. I mean, that's again, in theory, the hope. But I mean, right now, they have control over an exceptionally powerful piece of law that decides who gets to stay and who gets to go, you know, in housing across Ontario. And the city, I believe, and they've said this themselves, has had to form this subcommittee in response to the fact that, you know, they haven't had any tools up until this point to deal with these issues.
Right.
And I mean, we're the largest city in Canada. And I personally think it's somewhat ridiculous that we have an overarching provincial law to deal with housing matters when the needs of cities are so complex and so different. So now we wait. We wait and see what's going to happen come winter regarding the law. But I mean, no matter what that outcome is, the City of Toronto is now moving forward to find ways to use their own tools to help Toronto tenants who are at the mercy of it. And landlords as well. I mean, it's about protecting everybody. It's not just about the downtrodden tenant. I mean, this law is for all of us. So hopefully, hopefully we can dig up, you know, tools and tricks and better ways to make sure that we all have access to homes.
When I was preparing for this discussion, I looked up the last time you were on this podcast, and it's a total coincidence, but it is almost a year to the day since we had you on, and it was for an episode titled Inside Toronto's Housing Crisis. So a year ago, This was a city in crisis.
Yeah.
Is it better, or I think I know the answer?
I think the sense is that more attention is being paid to specific issues at the municipal level. Mm-hmm. I think the city has promised and is ostensibly doing its best to build more affordable housing. But if you talk to anybody who's engaged, say, on the research side or who's been invested in housing policy or advocacy for a long time, no matter what we're doing, we're not doing it fast enough and in the quantity that's needed. So right. The needle is not moving in a meaningful way. So there's promises and pledges and investigations and committees. But I mean, even if everybody worked overtime for the next, you know, 2 years, it's questionable if we would get the kind of housing required to meet our needs.
Beyond reexamining the landlord and tenant legislation, has mm-hmm. the new provincial government actually done anything since taking office with regards to this issue?
Well, I mean, very early on, they did introduce a sort of generally worded housing action plan. So they have promised, you know, that they are, you know, looking into the RTA. That's part of it. You know, looking into the RTA to, you know, ensure better protections for both landlords and tenants. I mean, if we were to look at, say, the extended timeline favorably, we would say that they are doing a thorough review of that piece of legislation. So it'll be really interesting to see what they come out with. You know, they have committed to, you know, making it easier for developers to build. But the city does that as well through, you know, a range of tax incentive programs mm-hmm. and exchanges and discounts on land. One thing that the provincial government has done, which was quite controversial and is now getting more attention in the press, is they essentially said that new units will not be subject to the rent controls that generally control how much, you know, landlords can charge you year over year on all other rental housing across Toronto. So purpose-built rental units, and it's important to say what those are. I mean, those are, you know, built and meant to be rental housing units.
Right, not condominiums.
Not condominiums. A colleague of mine has recently reported, so, you know, there was a building built on John Street, and this was a year ago, you know, tenants have moved in, and, you know, essentially 1 year after they moved in, they started getting notices about rent increases. And we're talking double digits. We're talking 15%, 20%. Mm. And that's essentially what the new law or this, you know, piece or application of the law allows landlords to do. So that's a big incentive for, you know, a builder to come into Toronto, because if you can build a 20-story tower and then you can charge tenants whatever you want, whenever you want, I mean, that's a way to make a profit.
Yeah. Is affordability or availability a bigger issue in Toronto?
Both.
Great. Because we do need more units, right? And if I was to look at it from the other direction, I would say that's what's behind that provincial decision, is to just encourage more units on the market at whatever price.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, that is, again, part of the existing tension between the city and the province, is this idea, and down at the city level as well. I mean, you need to create an environment where people want to come in and invest their money. You know, they want to bring in workers and steel and, you know, the time it takes to build and excavate. And that whole process is an expensive process. But at the same time, I mean, you have to understand that you have to understand that at a time when there is a serious lack of affordable housing, you can't make, you know, all of the best lands available to people who are only interested in making a profit. And I think the city is trying to address that through a range of programs. You know, they're trying to ensure there's a certain number of affordable units. But I mean, again, it's a complex and really difficult issue to address. And if you pull back again and look at the volume of housing we're building, and you ask any expert at any given time, on our current timeline, there's no way we're going to be able to meet the need that we're seeing on the streets right now.
How much of this is profiteering landlords and governments that haven't done enough, and et cetera, et cetera? And how much of it is just kind of an unavoidable function of Toronto's rapid rise as like one of the most enviable destinations in the world? Like, we're going to have people flooding in. Is it just capitalism at work?
I think with any city, any desirable city, and Toronto is desirable for lots of reasons, you're going to see gentrification. You're going to want to see people coming from all parts of the country, from around the world, to come live here, experience arts, experience culture. But I think when you look at housing issues in this city, it's not so much what's happening now, but I think you need to pull back many decades and look at sort of the big picture things. Like, you know, for decades, our social housing, our public housing was without support from the provincial and federal government and was allowed to fall into disrepair. I mean, you have to look at things like, you know, I can't imagine, like, very smart people have known for a very long time that Toronto was a desirable city. And I think with that in mind, should have built the infrastructure to support the people they knew were going to come. And this applies to transit. This applies to bike lanes. This applies to housing. And personally, what I find so frustrating is when I think of city government and I think of provincial government, I always imagine the smartest planners in the room looking ahead and thinking about the city that we want to be. And we've gotten to this breaking point, and that didn't come without, you know, hundreds of meetings and consultations and money spent on certain things. And I mean, while they're trying to fix it now, this problem was a long time in the making. And it's not just capitalism, and it's not just because we're a city that's cool to live in. Somewhere along the way, we lost our way when it came to planning and anticipating the city's needs. And we're trying to fill that hole, but we can't do it fast enough.
When you talk to people on the ground about this, tenants or landlords, what do they think is like most needed right now in 2020 if they could get something done?
I would say that landlords consistently feel like people are against them. I think that landlords suffer under the impression that, you know, they're always painted as bad individuals, that it's very difficult for them to make a living, you know, that they're managing older buildings, and, you know, they need incentives. They need to be able to raise the rent a little bit to manage capital repairs. They want that system to be fair and transparent, but they also are running a business, and they need to be able to do that without feeling like they're persecuted if they need to see, you know, fix things or, you know, change the lighting. And unfortunately, you know, the stories that we most often write about and what you see is landlords taking advantage of the process. And that does paint a lot of good landlords with quite a bad brush. And I think a lot of landlords would like to be lifted out of that category and be allowed to run a business in the city of Toronto. And that was probably a lot easier for them, you know, 10, 15 years back when these tensions weren't around. You know, good people making money, you know, just renting to people.
Right. And what about tenants? What's the most pressing thing that could happen next year?
I mean, on the policy side, for those of us who watch it, I would say that, you know, waiting for the new revision of the Residential Tenancies Act is quite a significant thing because it could eliminate or enhance protections for tenants. And there's going to be some pieces that could mark a real change in how it is that you can, you know, get into and hold onto a home. But I think if you're just talking to, you know, the average tenants on the street, it's just a profound sense of anxiety. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, how hard it is to find a place. You know, once I'm in there, what are all the different ways that I can be pushed out? You know, if I'm having a small problem with my landlord, you know, if there's bugs, if there's a heating issue, is it worth drawing attention to myself to get these issues resolved? Because it could result for trouble down the road. So again, I think it's just a lot of tension and fear.
Great. Excellent rental climate.
It's really, just coming on the radio to soothe. Yeah, no, it's not ideal. I think that people are working really hard at all levels from the ground up to try to find solutions to this problem. But in the meantime, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of confusion and a lot of people thinking that they're not going to find a place to live. And that's pretty upsetting because we're a big, wealthy city, and I don't think that should be the case.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Matthew, affordable and precarious housing reporter with the Toronto Star. And that was the big story. If you'd like more from us, including a look at just how bad it was 1 year ago, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca and you can search for Emily's name. You can also find us on your Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram too at Frequency Pods. And of course, you can find us in your podcast player. You probably know where we are. If you don't, just search for us. Search for any of our fellow podcasts on the Frequency Podcast Network. And as always, leave a good rating. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.